Hoy there, chummers. Welcome back for another episode of the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast. This is a Shadowrun 4th Edition Actual Play Podcast. Our game features a pony, a dryad, a catwoman, and a college girl. The amazing cast are Beth as the pony Grace, visiting the Sixth World from Equestria on a mission from Celestia herself. Kat as the gruff and mysterious dryad Deandra. Val as the mercenary with the hard outside and the soft spot for Grace. And Veronica as Cecile, the college girl, who has a way of getting into trouble and under everyone's skin. This is episode 3 of season 2, and it features more downtime as Grace attempts to find a magical society to join. Cecile spends time with her friend Kirsten, Boxer hangs out in her hood, and Deandra does more shopping. All things must end, though, including downtime. For all of you who have continued to spend time with us, and for those of you joining us for the first time, I want to tell you how much I appreciate it. I love playing with my friends and tinkering with podcasting. It's not something that I've ever done before, and I'm sure it shows. So it's super validating and amazing to watch the number of downloads and listeners grow. I really hope that you are enjoying the show, and I heartily invite you to join our Discord server and give the cast a shout. They love hearing from you. On other Shadowrun subjects, you've probably heard of some of the other great shows out there, like those absolute meatballs from Pink Fohawk, or my friends at the Berlin It's a Bug, Not a Feature podcast. Today I would like to introduce you to Bug City Blues. Chicago. Any team trying to make it here deserves our respect. These guys are an absolute must-listen.
Good day, citizens of Chicago. This is Oakley Wildwood, your anchor at Goldleaf News Network, bringing you the latest developments from the heart of the UCAS. And now for the news. The Chicago Containment Zone is witnessing a surge in kidnappings that has left the city on edge. Travel in groups for safety, folks. A good crew could be what gives you the edge to make it to your next paycheck. The streets are witnessing a spike in vehicle thefts and carjackings, leaving everything from jackrabbits to delivery trucks as smoldering, bullet-ridden scrap heaps. Lone Star PD advises secure private parking whenever possible. But in Chicago, even the safest of places can become a battleground. On a more hopeful note, the ghoul communities of Cabrini Green are uniting, driven by a hunger for justice. Vigilantes targeting infected citizens have been escalating tensions, promising violence if they do not leave the city. Those sympathetic to the ghoul cause have offered support by providing donations and offering security, though officials assure that they seek a non-violent resolution to the conflict. There's a lot going on in 2080s Chicago. Stay informed, stay safe, and stay with us by tuning in to Bug City Blues, a Shadowrun 6th World Edition actual play podcast, wherever fine podcasts are found. Now, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
All right. So last thing you did, you were looking at the pinboard. Deandra was reluctantly explaining to Cecile what it was about and had described the meeting with
Buzz and the two elves, and that the elves had warned her to stop her line of inquiry, and Buzz had told her that he had met, was it Cian, right? Am I remembering your brother's name right?
My brother's name is Rian. I am Rian. Cian.
Well, I got one of them right.
We're twins, and we're not very creative.
Or at least your parents, right?
No, we have ugly Norm names, too.
But, oh, God, like, right, because human parents.
Well, I don't know about my mother, but my father got goblinized in 2022, so...
Buzz had told Dinder that he thought that he recognized from the description that has been circulated about trying to find out the whereabouts of Rian. He had thought that he had been hired on a run. Well, they weren't really hired on the run. They were hired by a team of MCT Black Ops characters to create a distraction. And he believes that one of the peoples on that team was Rian. And the only name, other name that he remembers was this lieutenant. He thought at first it might have been Klein, but then he changed his mind to Clean. What else is on your pin board that you know about Rian and his demise?
There's like printed out emails from like a official inquiry and police reports that got filed as missing. There's a few like little mafia, not mafia leagues, but leads, but like the street gang leads that are all like cleaned up. There's some like pictures, some like photos that look like they're on like old photo paper of like evidence found in the apartment or whatever.
So what does Cecile think?
Well, you happen to know Procop, someone who's been running the shadows for who knows how long. Could be immortal for all I care. Have you asked him about this Clean character?
No. Again, I like just got home 30 minutes before you got here from my meeting.
Ah, so you are otherwise occupied?
Yes.
I could ask on your behalf.
Or, well, I can ask him at a different time. But I was going to hire, I guess you'd call it a netrunner nowadays, right? Netdecker?
No one says that. Where did you even hear? Have you been watching too many trids?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't watch many trids nowadays. Someone to search the internet.
Oh, okay.
Or hints of this Lieutenant Clean. And I thought maybe I'd try to find an address somewhere for him.
You know that's terribly expensive, right?
Yes. Well, I was going to ask you, but...
I'm flattered. But I'll probably do it on my own, even if you didn't ask, so...
Wow. So, reliable with the other people's security and their secrets.
Sure, I can take a look. Not right now, though. I'm getting out of these clothes. I'll be using your bathroom. Goodbye. She walks
Sounds
off.
Good.
Changing clothes.
I think Deandre will, like, stand out there looking at the pin boards for, like, a solid another, like, 5 minutes or so, and then go, like, sit in, Deandre was staring at the pen boards and then going to that she perceived as private. I think we've established that there's a balcony in Deandre's apartment, so she'd just go sit on the balcony.
Ooh, fancy.
Fancy.
Question, GM. Are you going to make me roll drain when I use makeup to just, like, keep Cecile's makeup fresh, or do you not care?
Yeah, I guess you need to roll drain.
Cool.
These are the burdens that Deandre lives with, or that Cecile lives with to look good every day.
I mean, listen, she doesn't have to be great. It just has to be, you know, magic. I'll just cast it at Force One. She's not trying to impress anyone today. Unless she might. Hold on, I have to think about this. Is it worth risking drain on the off chance that she does need to talk to someone important today?
Who would she set out to talk to that is important today?
Well, it's always possible that she'll see one of the magic ladies, and it's always good to have, like, good makeup on your, like, first real impression on them. I got 3 hits. Her makeup's looking pretty nice. Like, it's not gonna turn heads, but, you know, upper middle fashion sense. So no drain. Good.
All right, what else are you guys doing?
Well, Seal comes out of the restroom looking, in different clothes, which it occurs to you that you haven't actually seen her in different clothes this entire time.
How long did that take?
About a week. Oh, I thought...
Because Deandre might be out on the balcony now. She might not be...
I'd say, like, honestly, not a lot of time. Probably 20 minutes at most. Because, like, the... If she was doing real makeup, it would take longer, but she can just, like, zap herself with magic and look beautiful.
Yeah, but she's still gonna, like, actually physically change clothes. You can't zap your clothes magically to change, right?
Oh, well, yeah, but honestly, you know, 2070s clothing is probably pretty convenient.
Yeah, it's all Velcro.
15 minutes.
So, yeah, Deandre is out on the balcony.
So, Cecile finds Deandre and goes, so... I need a list of your brother's names, an up-to-date picture, any affiliations he could have, schools, that kind of thing, and just send me any other notes you think I might need. I'll work on this later.
I think Deandre would, like, look at her and go, hold on a second, and, like, literally walk into her bedroom and pull out, like, a box of paper records.
How about you digitize this and I get back to
Sure.
Cool. In any case, I think I'm going to go leave now. I'll probably come back for my bags, probably. And also to pick up that digitization. I assume you don't know how to text.
I have texted you before. I just call when it's more convenient for me.
Uh-huh. Anyway, yes. Goodbye. She leaves.
I think Deandre just, like, sits there and then, like, on the floor starts arranging the documents.
Oh my god, is she gonna take a picture?
I mean, like, we have current stuff that does scanning through your, like, phone camera, so I bet they have something like that in 2072.
Oh, sure, but, like, as Cecile, like, use a proper digitization tool.
Deandre was in the police for a while. She knows that she has to digitize stuff sometimes. She just doesn't own, like, a copy machine or a scanner.
So, Paul, where is Kirsten currently?
Yes. So we had established that Kirsten was working at the Soybucks and across the street from the campus that is frequented by students and staff alike.
Yeah. So Cecile's probably going to, like, be at a competing place getting some tea that's nearby so she can just intercept Kirsten.
So jumping to Grace and Boxer, the last time that... I think when we left off with Grace and Boxer, Boxer had met with her contact and bought some items from him. And Grace had talked to her contact, Greg, who's a talismonger, and asked Greg whether he could put her in touch with a magical society, which Greg very enthusiastically agreed to do.
Yes, very enthusiasm. Much, much do. He has no artillery motives, I swear.
So did you guys, the thing that's a little bit tricky is that you guys are a couple of days ahead of Cecile and Din there at this point. Boxer had spent some days working at the clinic, renewing sort of her contacts. She had talked to her friend and contact, Vicente, who had also asked her to keep an eye out that there might be some people in the neighborhood that were creating some disturbance. He thought they might be Humanus Polyclub types. And yeah, so that's where we left off, I think, with you guys. Is there anything that you guys would like to do at this point, at this time?
I mean, I do want to meet with Greg this session.
Cecile, you head to a competing establishment near the campus and wait for Kirsten's shift to end? Is that mm-hmm. your plan? Time comes about, you know that her shift is ending, and you've got a pretty good fix on her location as she's heading out.
I'm going to wait until she's like a block away from where she works and then just go to walk up next to her.
Okay. You start following her, catching up, and... are you trying to be stealthy about this at all?
Not really.
Okay. She, I'm trying to open her character sheet.
Please, critical glitch, the perception test, please.
As you sort of pull up beside her, Kirsten is, walking rather hurriedly. She's, she looks over her shoulder at you and gives sort of her usual bright smile and says, oh, Cecile, So good to see you.
Yeah, funny seeing you here.
Though, take it this means that you're past your troubles?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Just a little, what's the word? Tizzy? Something like that.
Tizzy? She looks quizzically at you. Oh, you guys are still walking. It. She's still walking.
So where are you headed this hour?
Well, I was thinking of going back to the Dawson, getting a little sleep before heading out for the night. You want to join me?
Sure. Sounds lovely.
You look surprised. Really? You've never gone out with me before?
Why not? I can help you study for, well, I assume you have something coming up that you need to study for.
She grimaces. Yeah. I mean, I could study.
Oh, you sound so unenthusiastic.
Well, yeah, I had some plans for tonight. I wasn't really planning on studying. Maybe I'll do some cramming tomorrow morning before class.
You know cramming is an ineffective means of studying. I've told you this before.
Well, it's all about priorities, right?
And what's more of your priority than college?
Well, I guess that's a fair point. Having fun, maybe? Should try it sometime.
Oh, I'm having loads of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Anyway, there is something I need to ask you.
Okay, anything.
How did you know I was going to be kidnapped by Evo?
Stops and looks at you and says, well, I heard it from somebody.
Vague?
Yeah, I heard it from somebody, not directly, and then I saw some other things happening that I was keeping my eye out for, and I put two and two together.
That's so.
Yeah, he looks a little bit, I guess, give us a judge intentions roll. Is judge intentions an opposed roll? No. Is it?
Ew.
She seems not exactly nervous, but she's definitely actually a character who wants to use her natural empathy to gauge another character's emotional state, intentions, or honesty can make an opposed intuition and charisma test against the target's willpower and charisma. So you got two hits. She doesn't have a whole lot of willpower, but she does have a good bit of charisma.
Oof.
She's definitely seems a little cagey, like she's not necessarily hiding the fact that she's trying to be vague, but she's definitely being vague.
Well then, how about I compromise with you and I just help you study wherever it is you're going, huh?
She stops again and looks at you. What is this about, Cecile? I mean, you've never really expressed any desire to spend time with me.
Favor for a favor?
Favor for a favor.
It's just my way of expressing gratitude that you saved my life.
Uh-huh. Hmm. All right, so...
DM, this is a lie?
Make a willpower plus charisma roll. She is doing judge intentions on you.
Willpower plus charisma, huh? Okay.
Mm-hmm. He sort of seems to take it at face value and says, oh, well, okay. I mean, that's interesting. I gotta admit, I'm a little bit surprised.
Oh, you didn't think I had it in my cold heart to help people?
Yeah, that's... pretty much sums it up.
Fuck you too, Kirsten. Come on, let's get to your house.
All right, well, you've never been to Kirsten's house, right?
No, never.
He says, well, all right, don't expect a lot. And then she takes you into some, you're actually staying in downtown. She's apparently lives in downtown near the Evo University or near the Washington University. And it's basically a little, not much more than a walk-in closet, really, in a building that's been converted into student housing kind of things. Not by the university, but by some landlord. It's still a nice building with lots of security, and Kirsten's room is really tiny. It's basically just a very small dorm room with an attached bathroom. And when she opens it, she looks a little bit sheepish. The inside is an absolute pigsty. I mean, there are clothes on virtually every flat and vertical surface.
Only?
Yeah, there's nothing hanging. There are no clothes hanging from the ceiling, surprisingly. But everything else looks, every other surface looks like it's been carpeted in clothes. You can't tell what's clean or not. And there are a couple of old takeout trays and... quick cursory glance shows you. Actually, do a perception check.
There. Nope.
Yeah. It's the place is a mess. It looks like a bomb went off in here. Kirsten starts sort of sheepishly trying to pick some clothes up off the floor, and she throws them on the bed, and then she realizes there's no place to sit but the bed, so she puts them back up off the bed and throws them back onto the floor. That's sort of the situation.
Theo just sits on the bed. You must go to more parties than I thought you did.
Yeah, I like to spend some time out, that's for sure. Actually, make another perception test at minus one.
Minus one? Okay. One.
Yep, so you see that the, I was going to say that her university books, but I don't think they're going to have books in 2072.
It might be e-paper.
Yeah, it'd probably be on her comm or something.
It could also be a tablet, like a Kindle, dedicated.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, that's dystopian. Make them buy your specific, like, PDA with all of the books that you need? Ugh. Subscription service for the books? Ugh. I can see it now.
You see it peeking out from underneath the pile of clothes that doesn't look like it's been disturbed for a week.
And I can see you haven't been keeping up your studies.
Oh, she looks a little bit frustrated. You know, Cecile, I do okay, okay?
Well, okay isn't going to get you into a fucking good job, and you know that.
That's not actually something I'm worried about. I've already got a good job.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do.
What's that? Gallivanting about the town?
I work for Soybucks.
What an illustrious career. I'm sure you have decades ahead of you. Come on, what do you really do?
I do jobs. I do things. I know people.
Clearly you know people.
I know people. So what's this really about, Cecile? This is utterly unlike you.
I mean, if you don't want my help studying, I can leave.
All right, so are you really going to study for a while?
Yes.
All right. She takes you up on the offer, and you spend at least a couple of hours studying, I imagine, right?
There is actually an instruction skill, so.
Do you have that skill?
No, but I can default.
Okay. Let's see how successful you are at tutoring Kirsten.
I will not be very successful, so I'm actually going to edge this test.
For Liz and Val's information, at some point in the last session, Cecile had a conversation with Prokop, and at some point in that conversation, Prokop offered her a stipend to tutor Kirsten.
Oh, okay.
In case you were wondering where this is coming from.
Out of character, I always did just kind of want to burst into Kirsten's life and be like, hey, have you been studying?
Now you're getting paid to do that.
I don't think I'm curious about it myself. It was just like a thing that was happening. I was like, yes, this makes much sense.
Full transparency, I do just kind of want to get under Kirsten's skin a little. So that'll be a plus one. Okay, and then I roll one more dice because that's how edging works. Nope, so just one hit.
Okay, so, you know, at first it's a little bit rough going. Kirsten's clearly not interested and a little bit frustrated by the whole situation. But, you know, you settle in into a groove and you feel like you've made some progress with Kirsten. And, she seems to be making some progress, picking the material up a little bit. Nothing spectacular. You feel some satisfaction. You actually seem to have accomplished something here tonight.
Nice. Of course, what would you expect, really?
Do you have any other plans, Cecile?
I was probably going to talk to Kirsten more, but like...
I mean, after a couple of hours of studying, you feel like you've, with three hits, you've made a decent, you made some decent progress. She's not a dummy, obviously. She just doesn't apply herself. Her studies aren't her priority in life, obviously.
She needs to see the beauty of academia and why it's so important for the soul.
I think it's very obvious to Cecile that that's not going to happen, but you still feel quite satisfied with yourself and how you've managed to improve her knowledge of the subject matter.
She might have even gotten a fundamental understanding of the curriculum. Dare I say it?
Yeah, she, at the end of the study session, call it about 3 hours worth, Kirsten looks up and says, wow, that was really fun. I feel like that was, that's the best progress I've made so far in this course.
Well, you're welcome, Kirsten.
We should do this more often.
Well, that's certainly an option. I do seem to have a lot of time these days.
Let me pay you back. You want to get dinner, or should I order something?
Sure, let's go out. I'll pay.
You will, huh? You feeling flush after your... She winks at your recent employment?
Ah, no, I gave that money back.
You did?
Yeah, didn't need it. He was right. Going to call me for a favor, and I don't like to owe people.
He looks and he said, well, you could do worse there.
Than owing that very shady character?
Yeah. I mean, obviously you've figured out at this point that I've worked for him more than once. That I am, in fact, on his payroll. Yeah.
Gasp, astonishment.
Well, let's talk about it over dinner.
Where do you want to go?
What do you feel like? Noodles?
Neo-Indian?
Neo-Indian, all right. I know just the place. Actually, it's probably the place you're thinking of, too, isn't it? It's the one right down the corner from the dorms?
Oh, yes. That one's delicious.
All right, let's go down there.
How much is this going to cost me?
It'll be part of your lifestyle.
Okay.
You make your way down to the to this little neo-Indian restaurant that's a favorite of the students in the dorm. It's really good after a late night out in town or partying. So that, I guess that probably occurs to you that there may be, probably not staff, but other students there. Is that something that you might be concerned about?
No, not at all.
All right. So you guys get down, you grab a booth, and the wait staff helps you out, and you get your food. And as you're eating, Kirsten looks at you and says, well, so to get back on the subject of our recent mutual employer, he's actually funding my college.
Really? What does he want all that for?
They took me in off the streets when I was about 13, 14, didn't have any parents, and took me in off the street. For a while, I worked at the club at the Samovar, and, you know, I got some training from them, and now he's got me getting an education.
Hmm. I didn't take him to be that generous of a man.
In my experience, and I've known him for about, what, 6, 7 years now, he's, I wouldn't say generous. Obviously, he always has an agenda, but it's generally not a malicious one. I think it's a fair trade, you know, a good college education that I could have never afforded on my own in exchange for, you know, working for him.
So he's just funding your university to just help you out? Like he doesn't want you to get a job or something?
No, I work for him.
Right. So he just wants you to be, what, better educated?
Right. And so that I can be better at my job.
Right. And I'm sorry, what's your major again? I've forgotten.
Social studies?
Right.
She looks a little bit dubious.
Uh-huh.
Taking a little bit of everything. It's sort of a core program.
Right. And I assume there's a lot of, what, athletic classes?
No. I've taken some self-defense classes, but a lot of it's anthropology, history, that type of thing. Economics, sociology.
You make it sound like you're going to go gallivanting out to South America and study ancient civilizations.
He laughs lightheartedly as she picks through her food. And no, but it's useful when you need to talk to people to have a good in-depth education.
Yes, I have found that personally as well.
Yeah, I quite enjoy it. I mean, I don't like studying, but I enjoy the classes.
See, that's the problem. Studying is important.
Well, yeah, I know, but I didn't say it was important. I just said I don't like it.
Definitely a lot less than hanging out with those new people you meet every week.
Oh, sometimes.
Sometimes? So sometimes it isn't as interesting.
Yeah, sometimes they're not that interesting. Sometimes they are.
Hey, sorry to broach the subject so abruptly, but I do recall I saw something on your feed. No, not from your feed. It was somewhere else. You were in a dress with some weird men?
She looks a little bit taken aback. Have you been snooping on me?
Kirsten, I snoop on everyone.
Well, yeah, okay. You do have that reputation. I think that's probably what might have gotten you in a bit of trouble recently.
Well, I didn't get where I was by my brilliant intellect, Kirsten. Sometimes you have to do politicking to get where you need to be.
He laughs. Ah, you know you got there by your intellect. Stop with the false modesty.
Ah, no. See, Everyone thinks that mages are just super smart, charismatic, and that's how they get ahead in the magical studies world. No. It's a lot of politicking, who you know.
Yeah, well, that's part of, I guess it's part of what I do. It's part of the job that I do. You should know. I mean, at this point, it's probably pretty clear to you that Brokop is a fixer and information broker.
Indeed, it does certainly seem that way. And you're what, an arm of his network trying to get in with a more academic crowd?
No, like I said, being a student here is purely for the education. But I do hear things and I spend a lot of time with people, and that information, especially if it's interesting, makes its way back to Prokop.
Right, but you did dodge my question.
What was the question again?
About the out of character or in character?
In character.
About you in that weird dress with those strange men?
Yeah. What was the question again?
Oh, it's one of those, huh?
Like I say, I spend a lot of time with a lot of people in a lot of places.
You should know better than to keep secrets from me.
Well, you should know better. You should be careful about where you snoop, if you've learned anything from the last couple of days.
I've learned nothing.
I can see that your tenure in Light is going to be short.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I have a feeling. But never mind. My activities have been that the ones you're talking about, probably those are information gathering jobs, but I would not repeat that. Especially.
Of course. And just so we're on the same page, I'm not going to go spreading around all of your activities to other people. At least not for free.
Better not do it at all. I mean, it's that's my safety you're talking about. If you turn into a liability, well.
Threatening me?
No, I'm just saying we might have to sever ties.
Don't worry, Kirsten. I'll only use it to blackmail you if you ever piss me off.
Well, then I might have to threaten you. She gives you a wink. She opens her jacket and you see a taser in a holster under her jacket.
Gasp! You're walking around with one of those?
You should try it sometime. It's liberating.
I'm a mage. I don't have a need for all of that.
Alright, are there any other subjects you want to broach with Kirsten?
One, actually. Hey, Kirsten, how's your food?
Oh, it's delicious. I always
Yeah, mine too.
We'll fast forward a little bit to catch the two teams up at this point. There are a couple of outstanding things that we've got going on. So, Diandere, you get a call. This is a couple of days later now, so that we catch up with, especially with Boxer, who spent a couple of days at the clinic. What's your contact, the doctor's name again, Val?
Kaylee.
Yeah, you spent a couple of days at the street clinic, volunteering and helping out and maintaining your friendship with her. And Grace, you talked to Greg. And so at this point, Dindir, you get a call from your contact, Zeke, on your comm. Actually, he texts you. You usually don't call each other. You just text each other. And he texts you back. Got that stuff you were asking me about. It was a little bit more expensive than I thought it was going to be, though.
Sounds like a plan. Well, I expected it to be expensive. What's the creds for it?
Are you going to be available tonight?
Yes.
I'll text you back. All right, I'll text you the time and location, and I will need to get together with one of my contacts. And I'm not exactly sure how much it's going to end up. Sorry, he texts. Sort of a sad face.
Thank you. You've been invaluable.
So, Boxer, you're walking back from the clinic this evening. You're keeping your eyes out because of what Vicente had talked to you about. And you, down the street, you see three human males are seem to be hassling an orc woman and her daughter as they're walking down the street. The woman's trying to walk faster and ignore them, and they're walking behind her. They appear to be heckling her. They're all wearing sort of similar clothes, dark colors, loose-fitting, with hoodies. Are you going to intervene in any way?
Yes, he is going to approach them conspicuously. Oh yeah, she wants to be seen.
They're ahead of you, walking away from you, so,
She doesn't care. She's speedy. She has the speed.
Yeah, you speed up so that you can catch up to them. Do you make any noise or sounds or anything to catch their attention?
Yeah, she's going to tell them, hey, idiots, stop. Why don't you pick on someone your own size? Fuck, that's so...
They turn around and stop, and for a minute you see that they're taken aback. The leader's a sort of a taller, blonde man. They all look like they're in their mid to late 20s. And he looks you up and sneers and says, look at this fragging crap that's going on here. Now that you're even making them in cat form, what's the world coming to? Isn't it bad enough we've got people with tusks and horns and warts running around? What do you want?
I mean, it could be worse. We could have more people like you. That is smoldering troglodytes. Now what I want is for you to fuck off and stay out of my neighborhood.
What? This is our neighborhood.
Is it now?
One of them says, look, she's even got cat ears.
Yeah, and I still look better than you ever will. How about this? Things could be much, much unpleasant for you. See, I don't know if you talk to your fuck-faced friends, wherever the fuck you come from, but if you have, you'll know that the people who fuck around here, they often get to find out. So, I've seen enough blood for today, so please, how about you fuck off,
One of them says, yeah, it could be worse for us. We could have an allergy to cats. And they start laughing. One of them punches the guy in the shoulder and says, ah, good one. Man, all you weird meta types, you just need to get the heck out of here.
Whatever you say.
This world is for humans. You're not human.
Human? All right.
Are you going to make an intimidation roll on them?
She's going to... No. Yeah, she's going to make an intimidation roll.
You want to edge it at all?
So she is outnumbered. Let's see. I guess they don't find her imposing.
And they got two hits. You got two net hits. And they are obviously out to cause problems. They're feeling rather superior and confident in their numbers. And they're out here to vent their hatred and anger towards all non-human metatypes. And you think that they are probably willing to commit violence. So there's, you know, there's that.
All right. I'm going to roll to it. Look, do you want to join the people in the clinic? I don't know, with some holes in you? Or do you want to go home? Because I can make both of those happen.
Yeah. Modifier. How about, will you make your roll?
Yeah.
Do you want to edge it?
Yes, I do.
So you got six total hits, and they are going to roll to oppose, and they got one hit. One of them starts to say something. The leader of them, the bigger one, starts to say, retort something, and the other two are, you see they've gone a little bit pale, and I guess they may have noticed that there's a little bit of a fleck or two of blood still on you, and as he's starting to retort, they're paling, and they basically grab his arm. Like, come on, man, let's get the hell out of here. Crazy Slit, she could do anything. Let's get. And they start running away. If you let them run away.
Yes. And if you actually wait, and if you come back, I'll find you. I know your faces.
Yeah, they're running now. At this point, since the other two started running, the leader has lost all willingness to fight, and now he's running too, so they're all running away, and he retorts over his shoulder, we'll be back with more. This isn't over.
Good. I'll kill them too.
All right, so you get home. Has Grace been staying with you?
Yes, apparently yes.
About an hour after the incident on the street, you get a call from Vicente.
That's the call box, or is that me? I gave him my number.
No, he called Box. Sorry. Vicente calls Boxer about an hour later.
Picks up.
Hey, Boxer.
Hey, Vic, what's up?
One of my contacts down the street says you run into some of those good for nothings that have been hassling people on the street.
Yeah, I got them to fuck off, though. Well, the ringleader said he'd be back. Maybe I'll need to carry something.
Did you, did you get any footage of them that you can send my way?
I did, yeah. You know I'm always recording. Well, almost.
Great. Yeah, that'll be, if you could shoot that my way, that'll be super helpful. We've been trying to, I've been trying to nail these guys down for a while, but whenever they see the cruiser around, they sort of evaporate. So anything you can send my way on that would be pretty helpful.
I'll shoot it over. But first I'll get it a run over, you know, the deal.
Okay. Yeah. And I would say, you know, just be careful. Just, I know they're probably just, sort of want to be humanist types, but you get enough of them together, they could be dangerous. I know you're tough and all, but you know, no sense provoking a full out battle in the streets. Give me a call if you see them again.
I will.
All right. Well, appreciate you looking out, and been good talking to you again, Boxer.
It's my pleasure. You want to get a drink sometime at Hazel's?
Yeah, absolutely. Could probably meet up tonight.
I think I'd like that. What time?
I'll tell you what. My shift gets off at 8, and I can probably, I wouldn't actually mind heading over to Hazel's for an hour before I head home to the family.
Suits me.
All right. I'll see you at 8.
See ya, Vic.
He signs off.
So they're home. Was Grace there listening?
What was that?
Was Grace there listening?
Probably. Would she have heard the confrontation with the people?
No,
just the call.
Just the call.
As soon as she gets off the phone, Grace emerges like that one Pat from that one video. You know what I'm talking about? The kittens.
Oh yeah.
And she approaches. And she says, "Hey Ollie, what's going on?"
A couple of fucking, you know, Ivanas. Yeah, people like them fucking around, finding out.
Doesn't Grace have a contact who's might be running in those circles?
Yeah, she actually does. But the next question would be: big humanists or little humanists?
Little humanists.
I don't think Jake. He's not.
But am I being questioned by your associate as actual humanists?
Okay, listen. He knows where you get the things that explode pretty. He knows where to get those things. I don't. I don't even know where to begin. It's not like I can walk into a gun shop.
Father God, you know you're feeding those people, right?
I'm not feeding them. I give Jake maybe like a few hundred new year every now and then.
Does it occur to Grace that maybe she could have a word with Jake and see what's going on?
Well, she's thinking that it's a different organization, but maybe we could roll intuition to see if she would be like, well, actually, maybe intuition plus logic. Or maybe actually specifically Seattle. Would there be any modifiers to this?
Sure. Plus two. All right. So it occurs to Grace that she knows somebody who might have some contacts or pull in those circles.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be a good idea to try and ask him to do anything about it, but I do think I want to ask if, like, what's going on, because would we have heard that what area of Seattle is this?
You guys are in Auburn, yeah.
Ugh, gross Auburn, puke. Yeah. I guess I'd text Jake and just be like, "Hey, Jake, we got some people who we think are clevers in our neighborhood in Auburn, and they're kind of causing some trouble. And obviously, I mean, wink emoji."
All right, what's Jake's loyalty to you?
2.
Okay. Yeah, so a couple of minutes later, you get back a text, and the text says, "There's some new people trying to clean Auburn up. I'll check into it and get back to you."
And she'll send back, "Thank you. I just want to make sure that I'm going to be safe. That's all." Tree emoji.
You get a text back, and it says, "I'll let them know that you're a friend."
Maybe don't say anything about me to them.
You don't get an answer back.
Oh no, Jake, no. I'm just going to send him an anxious, like, I'm going to send him the confounded and then leave it on that.
What's that look like?
Type in confounded.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but she, once she's done with that conversation with Jake, she tells Boxer that Jake said there's some news, but they are a poly club, like, actually. So, you know, kind of concerning. Well, did you catch them doing something?
Yeah. I don't know how the footage I got's going to be, but, well,
if when they come back. It's...
All right, so at 8 o'clock, you're going to head down to Hazel's.
Yeah.
Are you taking Grace with you? Kind of, what kind of establishment is Hazel's?
Have you ever been to New Orleans?
What was the question?
Have you ever been to New Orleans?
No.
Well, it's in the South, but it's very French, and it's also pretty magical, pretty connected to magicness. So the bar, Hazel is from that region, so, and she's Cajun and superstitious, so she would probably see in the bar somewhat after, I don't know, that New Orleans sort of background.
Okay, so it's, for Auburn, would you say it's a relatively fancy place?
It's exotic, certainly.
Okay.
Fancy, I mean, it's not a dump. It's a nice place, nice dump.
All right, so you head down to Hazel's to meet Vicente. You see a bunch of regulars in the bar, and is there music playing? Is there usually live music or anything like that?
Yes, but I actually don't know enough about New Orleans and all the their music. Jazz, sure, jazz.
All right, so there's a jazz trio playing in the background, and you know, you see Vicente, he's already up at the bar. He's halfway through his first beer. And he looks up when you come in and sort of raises his hand to wave you over. And a couple of the regulars give you a nod. Give me a perception check, please.
All right.
Yeah, a bunch of regulars. You get the impression that the bar is a little bit empty for this time of night and day, so but the regulars that are in there all sort of seem friendly towards you, give you a nod and recognition. You pull up to Vicente, and the barkeep knows you and comes around with your favorite, and Vicente looks at you, said, so here you've been spending some time at the clinic.
Yeah, doing my butts.
Yeah, no, I know. I know she appreciates your help, and I think it's a good thing that you're doing here.
I hope so. Anyhow.
So you tell me about the incident with these characters.
I just had to show the teeth again, but they were definitely the racist asshole plant. Yeah, I cleaned it. I'll send it over. Oh.
Was there anything you noticed about them in particular? That any kind of tattoos or any kind of any other recognition signals that I can keep an eye out for?
I guess that'd be a memory roll. Hey, Grim, would that be a memory roll?
Yeah, sure. The only thing that really, that you really remember was sort of the color palette. Dark, mostly black, loose-fitting clothes. They were all wearing some kind of hoodie with the hoods up.
They were all wearing dark clothes. Hoodies.
All right, well, I'll go over the... I'll go over the tapes and see if I can find any too. And I'll probably pull a couple of stills out to circulate around the rest of the force. But, you know, what I really wanted to ask you about, Boxer, was a couple of days ago there was a bit of trouble. I don't know if you remember that trouble at your that other place that you had that got blown up. I was wondering if that's blown over at this point.
Honestly, I know what one of them wanted. The other... I haven't the faintest fucking clue, which is okay, but, I mean, they haven't blown up my house.
Yeah, that's a little concerning, isn't it?
Fuck yeah.
Well, I'll keep my ears open if I hear anything. To be honest, that there was very little evidence. From what I understand and read of the reports, there was very little evidence. It's quite obvious that several people at the very least got hit, if not killed, in some kind of shootout. So it was definitely not... nothing to take lightly, so I'd be, keep your head on a swivel, watch your hoop. All right, you guys spend, another hour sort of small talk about the neighborhood. Then he gets up and pays the tab and says, well, gotta head home. The missus will have dinner ready.
Then I'll hide from me.
Stay in touch, and like I said, watch your hoop, keep your head on a swivel.
I will. You have a good one.
He heads out. Deandre, you get a text from Zeke. It's a location of a stuffer shack in Auburn again, and it's different from all the other ones, and he wants to meet around 8:30 p.m.
I think Dean Dare would probably end up being there, like, exactly on time as always, but this is, like, the day after she told Cecile everything, right? Or several days after?
This is a couple days after, yes.
Okay, then Dean Dare is put back together, but I think, like, for a day after she told Cecile everything, Dean Dare just fell apart.
And what does that look like for Dean Dare?
For Dean Dare, it looks like she just stops. Like, Dean Dare probably spent more time on that balcony. If Cecile ever came back, Dean Dare probably just never moved after sending her all the information that she had. Like,
so the text from Zeke sort of shakes her out of that?
Yeah. Or she's probably picked herself back up before then. She's probably spent a day just sitting on a balcony or, like, staring into the, like, just staring, basically. Or, like, whispering. I hesitate to say she's talking to herself, but, like, maybe. But Deandre definitely put herself back together for this meeting, so she is top form, suit jacket, no stains, stuff like that.
All right, so you're waiting. You're on time at the Stuffer Shack, pulled up in the back parking lot, the way you guys always meet. Less than 30 seconds after you pull up, Zeke's Black Roadmaster pulls into the parking lot, does a casual circle around the building, and then stops in front of you. As usual, side door slides open. The orc bodyguard gets out, puts a little footstool down. Zeke hops onto the footstool down onto the pavement, comes swaggering over to you in his usual black leather outfit, chrome mirror shades and shock of red hair. All right there, Dinder. So I got that, he looks around. I got that stuff you were looking for. Pretty exotic. Also pretty expensive. Getting it in the form you wanted sort of made it extra expensive. I know you've always been good for your orders, but this one's got me a little bit on edge because it well, like I said, it does run up into the money quite a bit.
Show me the bill, Zeke.
All right. He reaches into his jacket, pulls out a pack of cigarettes and hands it to you. He says, that's 10 doses. That's 5,000 nuyen.
I think Deandre would immediately pull out a cred stick and put it into his hand and be like, there it is.
All right. I mean, I know you've always been good for it. Don't take it as any kind of disrespect, okay?
I understand. It was an odd request. And these things are definitely more expensive outside the
Yeah, I had to exercise the network a bit to make that happen for you.
Yeah, they're an old Liberation Front trick when you want to make someone forget about something.
Let's see where that would be handy.
The trick we used was to slip them into a box of normal cigarettes and just go smoking, get information from, offer them the last stick. It's a kind gesture, and usually they're out for long enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, anything else that you're looking for?
Not right now, but I'll hit you up the second I know. I think I'm in
chip shape. You still have contacts in the tier?
A few, but they're not in the shadows. Where, and I think if I contacted a peace officer wanting him to ship dangerous mission materials and equipment all the way to Seattle.
No, that's not what I was wondering about. I was just wondering if you had any contacts in there in case I ever needed to run anything through there.
A few. Let's see. I don't think she knows any in the shadows current. She has an informant in Karasir. She used her, and no one else. Let's see. I wrote a name down for them, but it's on this sheet. Rory Callum is an information broker in Karasir, also a librarian.
Well, if you know anybody, if I've got a run going through there, we might be able to do some business. Not saying I've got anything, just keep it in mind.
Yep.
All right, well, as usual, good doing business with you.
Pleasure.
He hops back into the van. The troll picks up the step stool, gets in the van, slides the door shut, and Zeke's entourage takes off into the night. So, anybody have anything that they else that they want to do? It's about let's say we're 5 days on since you've delivered rigor mortis and gotten your payday. It's about 4 days ago that, I think it was about 4 days ago now that Cecile had her conversation with Kirsten and all that stuff happened. Anything specifically that anybody else is going to be doing?
I had one thing that's kind of out of left field, but I completely forgot about it last time. My Seattle contact, Alfie, the one we stayed with for a while, in...
Terislar.
I wanted to go and see if she had any chores that needed done and see if I could assist her. I guess, like, a box or, like, the equivalent of spending time at the clinic, I guess. Just going to...
Was Alfie's place a laundromat?
It's a like a coffin motel. Okay. That is.
I was thinking laundromat because there was some talk about doing laundry in that session.
Yep.
All right, so you go and spend some time in Terislar, reconnecting with old contacts and sort of hanging out and reestablishing your ties to the area. So it's been a couple of days and since. Greg had texted with Grace. Grace gets a text back from him, says, I've set up the meet. They're very interested to get to know you. Are you available?
Yes. Well, first she sends yay with like a gif of a dog wagging its tail. And then she sends, yes, I'm available.
All right. So can we meet tomorrow morning and, I will take you to meet them.
Take me? Question mark.
Yes, we are going to be meeting at the lodge.
Okay.
All right. He texts you a. If you don't text him a location, he'll text you. He'll text you a location to meet.
Yeah, I'll meet him there. Of course, astrally, and manifest for him.
All right. So
go ahead.
The next morning, you're at the location where Greg had asked you to meet, and you see him pulling up in a, you're astrally projecting. So you see him pulling up, you see his astral signature pulling up in what's probably, you can't discern too much of it, but from the speed and the way that he's approaching, he's probably in some kind of a vehicle.
Some kind.
And he gets out and he's standing around, looking around. Are you manifesting?
I think that if I could see his aura in the vehicle, I'm going to duck into the vehicle, make sure, like, was he driving?
No, he was, it was a grid guide.
Well, I'm going to appear in the vehicle and manifest, like, right next to him.
Oh, before he even gets out?
Yeah, before he even gets out. I'm not even giving the man a chance.
He starts visibly in good grief.
Hi! It's Ben, and she proceeds to say the exact amount of time that it's been since their last meeting to the second, and she gives him a smile.
Yeah, but...
Since last I saw you. How are you doing?
Are you manifesting in the astral?
Yeah. It's pretty tight.
You're not coming in person?
I was thinking that doing this would be a better first impression.
All right, well, okay, fine. They're very eager to meet you, and you know when we get there, you should take my lead. All right, I'll do the initial introductions. Okay.
She at first tries to suppress the doubt that she can feel on her face, but then she realizes that Greg probably wouldn't be able to read her face, and she stops and she doesn't care, and she says, "Okay, sounds good to me. I'll just be following you until we get there."
So are you staying how does that work? Are you staying manifested in the vehicle or you're just following him in the astral?
I think she'd probably demanifest just to reduce the chance of InfoSec being breached. I would say it exactly like that. I need to reduce the chance of InfoSec being breached. I'm sorry.
Greg looks he looks sort of hesitant and disappointed by the whole situation. You distinctly get the impression that he was hoping that you would be there in person. And you can roll a judge intentions.
Let's roll. I want to roll judge intentions. Sweetie, you roll judge intentions for me. 4.
Yeah, you've got a pretty good read on him. I mean, you're also seeing his astral signature. He's definitely disappointed. He was excited. He thought, you know, you get the distinct impression that he had been anticipating some kind of coup or, you know, some kind of grand entrance that he could make with you. And he's feeling extremely disappointed and uncertain about how this is going to go at this time. You don't see any malice towards you in his aura or in his intentions. You're seeing, he's actually not really thinking all that much about you. He's mostly thinking about himself and how this is going to affect his standing with the people that you're going to meet.
And she says, "Oh, Greg," before of course she disappears, or maybe after she disappears, she's going to like reappear, like sitting on the foot, like the floorboard, and like to his side in front of him. I don't really know how much foot space these things have, but she like looks and she says, "Oh, Greg, listen, I can see you're disappointed. It's both a security caution for me, but also there's not many people who can astrally project, and very few who can are also not metahuman mages. This is going to impress them, okay?"
Yeah, okay. No, I get it. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Next time, I'll bake some cookies and I'll bring them with myself.
How make a that? Perception test.
I would be active perception all the way at the bottom. There's so few skills. Yeah, because I have most of them in groups. I rolled a one.
Okay. With one hit on your perception test, you get the impression that Greg has made an effort for this meeting. It looks like he's probably cleaned himself up a bit and tidied himself up.
Is he normally kind of stinky?
Well, he's a talismonger, so I know I shouldn't stereotype, but you know, we all know how talismongers are.
Aw, poor little baby. He took a shower for the first time in 5 months.
Yeah, washed his hair, slicked it back, combed his goatee out, polished his small purple glasses.
Sucks to suck.
What's his loyalty to you again?
2. No, wait, it was 3.
Yeah, so he obviously, you guys do get along when you do business, when you're talking to him about magical reagents and how magic works. You've had some long discussions and get along quite well.
Yes, we do.
So as you're following them in the astral, the car drives through a better neighborhood of downtown Seattle and stops in front of a large building that's and Greg gets out of it and looks around as if to see if you're going to materialize. He says, "Are you you still there?"
Is this in broad daylight?
Yeah, it's in broad daylight.
Is there like a window in the building that we're approaching that he could see into?
There are a lot of windows. But I think in the astral, you can't see through windows.
This is true, but he'd be able to see me through a window if I manifested. So I think I'm just going to wave him over to the building through one of the windows. And then, like, whenever he gets to the door, I can, and like he comes through, I can manifest alongside him so that he gets his dramatic entrance.
Okay.
Without, you know, jibbing me too hard.
It's a fairly populous area. There are a lot of people walking around. You're seeing them in the astral. And you do notice quite a few, almost an abnormally high number of awakened, magically active people in the area. And you almost immediately notice 2 Watcher Spirits that are hanging around in front of this building.
I should go chum it up with the Watcher Spirits, of course.
Yeah, as you approach, you know, you stay there. The rate of bounce starts to increase as you approach. So both the acceleration and magnitude of bounce improves or accelerates until you get close to them and they're practically sort of pogoing up and down, smiling at you in anticipation of either giving alarm or something else happening.
Hi!
Hi! Woof.
And she gives him a smile, and she says the signature line, "Watching, watching, watching!" And she gives them her warm smile.
They immediately start buzzing and bouncing around, "Watching, watching, watching, we're watching you!"
I'm probably here to see your master and one of your master's friends. Do you think you could, I don't know, tell them that we're here? I'm here with Greg, the mundane, you know, emotions.
Tell them that you're here, but you are here.
Yes.
You are here.
Yes.
You are here.
She proceeds to just slide past them saying yes into the building.
You haven't manifested physically yet?
Not yet.
Okay. So Greg is still waiting for you on the sidewalk. He hasn't he's looking around going, Grace, are you there? Grace, where are you?
He really doesn't understand how this works, huh?
The watchers don't attempt to stop you from entering the building in any way. So you pass through. Okay. So as you pass through into the, through the outside wall, you do see on the astral that there are four or five awakened, magically active entities in this room. None of them appear to be astrally perceiving at this time. You also notice a large amount of magical items or things that have some kind of magical power attached to them. And then you see further in, you do see what appears to be either a ward or a barrier, or maybe it's a lodge. And perceiving, you could do a perception test, right?
Yeah, I could. Unless you mean a sensing to like study an aura and tell what it is.
It's up to you if you want to do a sensing test or a astral perception test.
Makes no difference. Three.
Yeah. So there are five. There are five people, and there is definitely some kind of a magical ward, probably a lodge, in the building. And but there doesn't seem to be anything specifically directed at you going on here.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, I want to do what I initially planned and wave him over through a window before entering through the foyer with him.
Okay, when you manifest, you realize that you're in a store.
It's a public space.
It is a public space, yes.
It's okay. It's not a it's not a physical illusion. So unless there's someone in the store who sees me, I think I should be fine. Even if someone on the street notices me, it's like, whatever. It's a magic shop. Of course, they got weird shit going on.
So you manifest and you wave him in?
Yeah, I'm going to wave at him like a woman possessed. Like maybe even make a show of like shouting his name, although I'm not actually going to do that.
All right. He catches the movement out of the corner of his eye, and you can see him start again. And then he quickly hurries in through the front door. And says, Grace, come on, you were supposed to follow my lead. You're gonna mess it all up. He seems genuinely irritated with you.
Oh, would you prefer if I sat on your shoulders? And she suddenly like kicks off with a little stomp of her hoof. And she actually goes to his shoulders like a snake almost.
No. Get away from me. Come on, look. We need to be dignified here.
And she's back on the ground.
These are serious people.
Okay, they're serious people. I get it. Let's go say hi.
All right. He starts walking in and glances down to make sure that you're following him. And there's a counter, and you see that this is some kind of magic store. They sell, you see lore books, and you see magical reagents and things like that. And there are a couple of people standing around looking at the items on the shelves, and then there is a older man standing behind the counter. And as you approach, you see that he recognizes Greg, and he, in a very sort of dignified and respectable kind of way, or self-respecting kind of way, walks towards you. He's got a big white beard and is slightly balding, but his hair is white and sort of long. And he's wearing a brooch with a what's probably some kind of hermetic symbol on his neck. And he approaches Greg and reaches out with his hand and says, "Ah, Greg, so you made it. And I assume this is the entity of which you spoke," looking at Grace. And Greg says, "Yes, this is Grace. And she would like to become a member of our magical order.
Yeah, she rears up onto her hind legs and she offers a forehoof to him. Grace Winter's Blossom, nice to meet you.
He looks startled as you do this, and he glances questioningly at Greg, then reaches out a hand and takes your hoof and shakes it. Ah, well, yes. Are you under the effect of some magical illusion? You see him go to assess you.
I am not currently under the effects of these spells. No, and she smiles.
So you're not metahuman.
No, I am not even a little. I am as distant from metahumanity as any other extraplanar.
I see. It's a pleasure to meet you, Grace. Could you just give me and Greg a moment? Greg, could you follow me for a moment? And Greg looks down and he says, just hang on a second. This will work out. Are you going to do anything?
I want to eavesdrop, certainly. Because I need a line of sight to them when they do it. It depends upon where exactly they're going.
Okay. He basically just sort of takes Greg's arm by the elbow and leads him behind the counter. And then he says, he sort of leans in and whispers to Greg.
Imagine I can hear this just fine because, you know, good hearing.
Yeah, you can hear it just fine. And you hear him say, now, Greg, I thought... When you said that you had someone of a magical nature who wished to join the order, that they were going to be metahuman, you know the rules. We don't accept non-metahumans or non-sapient entities. I mean, you can't just bring an animal in here and expect us to take them into the order.
I am very sapient, sir. I do not appreciate the implication that I am some base animal. My people, she's saying this out loud, my people have existed for millennia more than yours. Not millennia, aeons. And I came to this world to learn of you and help you. And now I want to learn of your magics and your magicians. And I want to further my practice in that process. But if you're going to disrespect me, well... I'm sure there are many people who would be very happy to have someone such as I in their order. And there's visible air quotes that pop up when she says that in the blue of her magic.
He looks extremely startled as you speak out. And then as you finish, he looks back at Greg and says, you see what I mean? You can't just be bringing any free spirit or I don't know what this is. I've never seen anything like it here. We have rules about membership. And then he looks at Grace and he says, my dear Grace, I meant no offense, but what my friend Greg here doesn't understand is that our society has rules about membership. And I'm afraid while I would be very keen to have you to speak to you and understand better who and what you are, I'm afraid membership is probably out of the question at the moment.
And just why is that?
Because he looks a little bit flustered. Because you're not, well, first of all, you're not meta. He says,
what's his meta time?
He's human. And he says, and secondly, how should I say this? We would need to ascertain the nature of your being. And I don't know how willing you would be to undergo that process.
Listen. And she's pushed off of the ground again. She's floating over towards them. If you are going to underestimate me so and insult me nakedly in front of my own face, which actually you weren't trying to be forward. I realize that. You were trying to hide what you were saying. You have lost an opportunity. And Greg, I am frankly appalled that you brought me here without knowing, without informing them properly, without forming me properly. I wasn't aware that I was going to have to jump through hoops.
Greg looks visibly chagrined. You see his face go pale and then go red. And he's said, no, wait. We can figure this out, guys. Okay. Listen, Mr. Pike, Grace is obviously a sentient and magical being. I agree with her. We are missing an opportunity here. She would be of great value to our organization and would increase our standing, the standing of our lodge immensely. I've seen her. She's magically active. She knows spells. She speaks. He says it very awkwardly, as if it's like he doesn't feel comfortable saying what he's saying. And the old man's looking from you to Greg, and he says, Greg, there are rules. There's an order. Everything we do has to have an order. We can't just break the rules. And he looks at you again. He says, Grace, I'm sure I would be absolutely thrilled to speak to you and talk to you and understand your nature, but without further understanding, the order is not something that one can just walk up and join. Even a metahuman can't. Even Greg is not yet a full member. I'm sorry, what was that?
She looks kind of confused when he says that, and she stops in her tracks. Wait, are you telling me that you accept mundane metahumans over?
No, we do not accept mundane metahumans. I was simply saying even a human mage walking through the door would not immediately be accepted into the order.
I understand that. I'm sure you can understand, however, my frustration that I am being discriminated against on the basis of my metatype.
But I don't know what you are. We don't know what you are.
Well, then we can speak about it.
Do you mind if I assent you?
You may.
Very well. Thank you.
She puts down on top of the counter and it pops up.
You can see him peering at you, sort of leaning his head from side to side, and you see his aura shifting. You see the man is quite magically powerful, but it's a very subdued kind of magic. There's nothing very flashy, or there's not a lot of action in his aura. It's all very focused. Greg, on the other hand, standing next to him, is, you know, beyond mortified, embarrassed, disappointed. This big reveal that he thought was going to happen here, you know, bringing Grace to these people that he thought was going to make him important in their eyes, is not working out the way he wanted it to. The man is looking at you and steadying you, and then he sort of shakes himself and pulls out and says, "Ah, yes, I see. I don't understand, but I see. You are certainly a very interesting magical case, but would you be willing to meet with the rest of the order at some time to discuss magic, your magic specifically?"
Yes, I would be willing to do that, so long as I am not misconstrued as a uncivilized animal again.
Indeed. Well, I apologize. He makes a sort of small bow towards you, and he says, "I was under the misapprehension when Greg had contacted me and said that he had a magical entity of unknown type. I thought, and then when you walked through the door with him, I thought that he had, well, for lack of a better words, was attempting to pull the wool over our eyes. Do you know the metaphor?"
"Yes, I know the metaphor."
"But apparently that was not so, and I acted in haste. So I apologize for that."
"I cannot say that I do not still feel somewhat dishonored, but I'm willing to work forward with you and your people."
"Very well. That is understandable. So in that case, I will put together a more organized and orderly introduction. In the meantime, you can call me Dylan. My full name is Dylan Pike, and the order to which Greg has attempted so clumsily to introduce you is the Hermetic Order of the Auric Aurora." He says, very self-important, as if expecting you to know what that is.
"I have never heard of that. What is that?"
"Ah, well, we are one of the largest hermetic magic groups in Seattle, and we were actually founded for the Awakening. We've always been a very prescient group, so our understanding of magical theory dates back well before the Awakening." And
I feel like that's bullshit. Can I check him on that?
Sure.
What would I roll for?
Do you have any Arcana skills?
Go to knowledge.
Oh, you have
Arcana.
I'll say magical traditions is a knowledge skill.
I have magic theory. I also have aetherology, which because the aether is kind of essential to how magic ebbs and flows in the six world. I feel like that might apply.
What was the first one?
Magic theory.
Magic theory?
Yeah.
What's a question?
And did you say you had knowledge Seattle?
I also have knowledge Seattle. This is true, yes.
All right. So how about we roll knowledge Seattle and magic
theory? Okay. Okay, then.
Two total.
Two hits. So you have perhaps heard of this order, and they were indeed founded before the Awakening. Although your understanding is, of course, that before the Awakening, there wasn't any magic or very little magic. But this group, to your knowledge, is older than the sixth age.
The sixth world.
Sixth world.
Well, I think she's going to think about it for a moment and say, well, I suppose there is much I have to learn. I was under the impression that magic was completely outside of the access of metahumans before the sixth world.
He looks somewhat full of himself at this point, as if he's got knowledge that you don't have, and he's quite pleased with himself. He says, well, as I said, our founders were a prescient group, and they understood that magic was a part of the real world, even then.
Oh, well, I suppose I'll have to learn more.
Very well. I will contact Greg when the meeting has set up, when I have called the full order together here. We will meet here, and we will make the proper introductions, and we will have a conversation, and we will see from there where this goes. In any case, you should know, Miss Grace, that I am very interested in learning about you and of your magic.
Which, Greg, do you think you could text this place's address to me, my comm link? Thank you. And could you also send me his number?
He does that rather quickly and downtroddenly. He's looking sort of like a disappointed puppy.
Aww. Aww.
The whole situation is not what he was hoping it was going to be.
Yeah, I can tell. Poor thing.
You remember, you caught on to that this pike person had also said that Greg was not yet a member of the order, and sounds like he might have failed a test here.
Well, I wonder what test that was. It couldn't be. You don't think that he doesn't have any magic. Oh my god. Oh my god. Do you think he's like told these people that he's awakened? And he's like, it's just, I'm just still trying to learn, you know? And they're like eating it up because he has a little bit of charisma. Oh my goodness. Can I see?
Can you do what?
Can I try or confirm or deny with the information that I have and like with them in the room now, if he has tried to convince them that like he's awakened or like in the process of awakening? Because he's mundane, at least mundane. As far as I recall.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could just flat out ask.
No, I think Greg is a wounded little boy, and I should probably be nice to him and not, you know, beat him up about being a little bit of a dummy. Maybe, you know what I could do? I could do something nice for him. I could give him clairvoyance and, like, give him a show of size.
You sure that's a good idea?
Like, show him around Seattle. Send the camera around. I could duck underneath stuff, fly around, fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a good idea. I don't feel like it hurt. I see my issues.
So I take it you leave at that point, right?
Yeah, we'd leave at that point. Once we got everything settled with Dylan, was his name? Dylan Pike?
Dylan Pike.
I suppose I talking to Greg as we're
Dylan.
Dylan Pike. As we're leaving, I I'd probably pull him aside before we actually leave so that we're somewhere that I have coverage from, like, people looking in from the street. I'd be like, hey, are you feeling okay?
Yeah. I was really excited about this meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you. That was kind of gross of them, you know?
I didn't expect that. And I guess, yeah, I sort of owe you an apology, don't I? I hope we're still friends.
Oh, we are. I was actually thinking maybe we could actually meet up in person. And, I don't know, we could go flying.
Flying? What do you mean?
As in...
like with a VTOL, or...
She shakes her head. No, silly, with magic.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
Wait, hold on, let me take him, make him light, snap the sterile bonds of the earth, and give him flight. She says that, but a lot more forcefully, as though it's an incantation. She gives a smile at him.
He looks a little bit puzzled at first, and they said, yeah, that would be fun. You know, we should probably, are you serious? Are you still serious about joining one of these groups?
Yeah, do you have others?
Not really. I've been sort of following the this one because even though he was a bit of an asshole, they're still a serious hermetic scholarly group. They have a lot of knowledge, and I was really hoping to tap into that and start networking with them to help my business out a bit.
I am thinking I'll probably meet with them and try to talk to them. I'm kind of on edge after what happened. And she kicks off again and, like, floats up. And she actually, like, leans into his ear, like, so close that he'd probably be able to feel her breath if she was physically there. But, of course, she's not. And I think it's important to say that I know these sort. There were a lot of them at my at the School of Magic where I come from. They're kind of pompous, and they think very highly of themselves. And sometimes, Mom, they do know things, but they are also a headache to deal with. She backs off.
Yeah.
It's just something I'm mindful of.
Well, he's being a bit of a dreckhead.
Mm-hmm. Either way.
All right. Well, if you want, what I was going to say is, if you want, I'm going to keep, I'll keep looking. I'm sure there's a better group out there that's more open.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it if you'd keep looking. But what I was going to offer is maybe we could go to a local park and you and I could levitate around just for the hell of it.
Today, I don't think I can do that today.
What about tonight? Come on, Greg. Don't you want to fly?
Yeah. Well, I do sort of have to get back to the store. So maybe later?
Yeah, okay. Whenever, Greg.
I gotta go do some
research. Whenever. I've been kind of swamped with work. Just text me, you know?
All right. Well, that was a bummer.
Yeah.
All right. I'll see you around, Grace. Take care of yourself. I'll be in touch. I'm going to find, I promise you, I'll find the right one.
Thank you. And then she proceeds to, like, barrel roll into the wall and disappear. She goes back to her shoes, where she left them in Box's apartment.
She's still there. She's there. She's just...
So Nightingale's body was probably just in the, like, okay, I don't know if Boxer would have come. I mean, she could have if she insisted upon it, but she would have.
This is weird magic shit.
Yeah. She'd also have had to, like, pursue them in secret, which would be kind of whack.
Yeah, Boxer was probably at the clinic.
Yeah. But, she goes back to her shoes. She probably would have wanted to leave her body somewhere that Boxer could check on it. Just, you know, like, stuff me in a closet. I'll be okay. I don't really want to lose it. Just stuff me. Yeah, that's all. That's it.
I wonder if Grace's body would be susceptible to being inhabited by a Shedim.
I don't know what those are.
Oh, that's nice.
That'll be fun. A spirit-like thing that likes to... inhabit the bodies of people who are out of their body. You know, like floating around saying, oh, look, somebody's left their body lying there. Let me just take that over.
Like those crabs that, like, steal other things and make it into their shells.
They steal other things' shells?
And it's really, really hard to get them out.
The Shedim?
Yeah.
I imagine if it got inside of her body, it's like currently confused as hell. And it's like doing that thing where like the animal has a bag on its head. And so it's like, or like it's wearing a harness or something. So it's like you can tell it kind of knows how to function, but it just can't. You know what I mean? Maybe. It would have to learn her body.
It would be an interesting game.
Yeah.
It just occurred to me. Nothing serious.
Oh, no. I was away for 1 second. Damn it.
All right. Anything else? So I think we've sort of wrapped up most of the loose ends that were out there at this point.
Although Cecile might spend a day or night at the Samovar just to see if those two nice ladies go and talk to her.
I guess I would ask, are you going through the front door or the back door?
Probably the front door.
Does she make any attempt to see what kind of act is playing?
I mean, not really. She's probably just going to hang out there in there and read.
Oh, yeah. She'll go in there and it'll be like Elven jazz rock fusion or something. The other funny thing is I have a feeling that if Cecile did try to go through the front door, they probably wouldn't even let her in.
I'm sorry, you're too fancy for this lobby.
You're not on the guest list.
Oof, that'd hurt.
Yeah, that. If you want to do that, that's exactly what would happen.
Well, then I guess she just doesn't go to the Samovar. She leaves. God, can't believe Prokop didn't put her on the guest list.
Oh no,
so rude.
Absolutely not.
Am I on the guest list?
I don't think any of you are on the guest list. It's not so much a guest list as a approved. Yeah, there's definitely an approved list. Cecile at some point did do a matrix search on Samovar and basically found that it was sort of a exclusive, semi-secret club that had a lot of unusual acts that it was very difficult to get into.
I see.
But you guys have been there a couple of times already.
She doesn't care that much. If they really need to talk to her, they'll like send her a message or something.
Yeah. Well, you guys always came in through the staff entrance, so there's that.
Yeah. If she were to go through the staff entrance, would she be let in?
I don't know.
In that case,
depends on how I'm feeling.
Depends on how I'm feeling.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sounds, audio, video, and or any proprietary material used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast to use such names, logos, artwork, marks, and or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast in any official capacity whatsoever. The music for the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast was written and performed by Trace Mineral. The Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons License 4.0, meaning you are welcome to use the material as long as you give us credit.